Hi there. Thanks for downloading and listening to the 4 Million Years Later podcast. This is the show where two old friends get together and watch an episode of the Generation 1 Transformers cartoon in story order and then convene to talk about what we saw. Lifelong fans of the show, never fell out of love with it. Now doing a careful episode-by-episode watch to compare our perspectives of when we were children, when we were adults, and between ourselves. My name is Jersey Drozd. I'm a cartoonist and teaching artist, and the other host is named...
Hoover.
I feel like that was like my smoothest intro yet, and it only took us like 89 episodes to get there.
I'm sure practice. In about 9 more episodes, we'll have finally perfected things.
And then we end the podcast. I don't know what's going to happen after that. I don't know. I'm sure we'll have discussions about it. But here we are at episode 89, and we're talking about what?
This is Grimlock's New Brain. This was by Paul Davids. He wrote Thief in the Night, Chaos, and Cosmic Rust.
Oh.
And he also wrote for Defenders of the Earth, Bionic Six, Spiral Zone, and Cops, as well as a few other things. TF Wiki also states that Marv Wolfman put the finishing touches on this script.
Really?
Yeah, I wonder if that's what really draws you to it. Like, there's a thing in young Jersey's mind, like, crisis sense tingling.
Yeah, I'm sure we talked about it on the show, is that, yeah, it was Crisis on Infinite Earths number 3. That was the moment when I knew I wanted to make comics for the rest of my life. It could be. But also, it's like, this is one that has a lot of emotional resonance for me. And when I encountered it as a child, I remember being really moved by it. I have some big thoughts about some of the new characters we meet in this episode, just in like a broad sense. But I will not commit to the idea that this is a very great episode. It's okay. there's a lot of, that's okay. But there's a lot of, and this is probably like the most recurrent theme, at least from where I'm sitting on this project, is there's so much promise. There's so much suggested, and there's so much that, like saying like this could be amazing. And I have to think that as we get to our 89th episode, that is part of what made us love this show and keep showing up for it. Was like it kept on promising. Like, yes, it's going to be that great. And it was like, oh, they never really got that great except for a few times. But I'm not bagging on it. This is like still like there's a lot that I'm going to celebrate in this one. So are we recommending people go watch it?
Yeah, it's got new characters. Spoiler alert.
New characters. So where can we watch it?
Well, this is season 3, episode 24 on Tubi.tv. Or you can go to the Hasbro Pulse YouTube channel where the entirety of the series is posted.
So depending on which commercials you want fed to you, you can go to either of those platforms. So, all right, are you ready to start?
You ready for that cold IMDb read?
Yeah, it's time for the cold IMDb read where I read the log line that Hoover collects from IMDb.com and I never read it ahead of time because we want to see what happens when you crowdsource information on the internet, get everybody to play along. You get odd sentence structures because we're all coming from a different place when it comes to grammar, I guess. And I'm not going to say that I'm necessarily the final arbiter of this, but let's see if I get tripped up this time. Here we go. While fighting the Decepticons, Grimlock bites some controls. Okay, while fighting the Decepticons, Grimlock bites some controls, I guess. Yeah, sure. The feedback boosts Grimlock's intelligence while many of the Autobots are captured. Wait a minute. Already I'm getting screwed up here. The feedback boosts Grimlock's intelligence, period. When many of the Autobots are captured, period. Okay, this is like a telegram. Stop. Grimlock builds the Technobots. Stop. No. Grimlock builds the Technobots and makes a sacrifice so that his new creations will be better suited to fight the Terracons. That is what happens in this one.
Well, I don't know that Grimlock bites some controls while he's fighting the Decepticons.
They're kind of fast-forwarding a little bit. They're giving us like sort of like a montage of what happens in this episode. But yes, you're right. He is not fighting the Decepticons when he bites the controls, but... I mean, he bites the controls because the Decepticons. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So let's see how this one begins, Hoover.
Well, as we begin, we zoom in on Cybertron, and it looks sloppy. These are not the beautiful paintings of Season 1, kids. There may as well be a signature in the bottom right-hand corner that reads, ACOM, so you've been warned.
Yeah, I encourage everybody to look at that first painting of Cybertron where the buildings at the equator are pointed up towards the North Pole of the planet. So if you were standing on the equator, the building would be sideways. Oy, that's not how gravity works, ACOM. But it's fine. I understand that it's Cybertron. The other two things that I noticed in watching this one as we've gone through this careful examination of the show is there are two things that are like the dead giveaway of an ACOM episode, besides the off-model characters and everything. But there's a preponderance of airbrushing going on, especially in the backgrounds, and also a lot of shots on the horizontal. For those of you who are like the visual storytelling nerds like me, ACOM really likes to put the camera on a tripod and just shoot so that the horizon cuts right in the middle of the screen and you're looking at everybody dead sideways. It happens a lot in their episodes, whereas when you go to like the Toei episodes, there's a lot of like dramatic upshots, dramatic downshots. They're really moving the camera around so that you get that Citizen Kane-y kind of visual adjective of how this is supposed to feel. ACOM just like, no, let's look at them sideways. Let's look at them in the front. That's what you get. So, yeah, we're on Cybertron. What's happening on Cybertron?
Well, we cut to Ultra Magnus, who is addressing a crowd about yet another new power generator that they have installed within Cybertron. I guess this is their second attempt after the failure depicted in The Dweller in the Depths.
Mm.
Magnus claims that the power supply will last forever, which is a very bold claim. Rodimus, who's beside Magnus and Perceptor, yells for Grimlock to throw the switch. And Grimlock, stationed in a control room above the proceedings, is in dino mode. And just as a side note, he never transforms to robot mode in this episode. He merely does everything in his dino mode. He replies back to Rodimus.
Me Grimlock ready, but forgot which button.
I went through it with him 5 times.
Now, Grimlock, remember?
Grimlock reaches across the console and pulls a lever labeled Emergency. It immediately begins to spark and sets off an alarm. Rodimus somehow can't believe the ineptitude and rushes up a flight of stairs to join him in the control room, followed by Perceptor. Grimlock realizes his error and pushes the emergency lever back. The sparks and smoke dissipate and the alarm stops. He turns his attention to another lever, also labeled Emergency, which sets off yet another alarm.
Put Grimlock in the room with all the levers marked Emergency. That's on you, Rodimus.
Grimlock then realizes his error and pushes the lever back, stopping the alarm. He then looks around at all the other levers and tries to deduce which one he needs to pull. And just as he goes to twist a sort of captain's wheel descending from the ceiling, Rodimus rushes in to stop him, pointing out the actual lever he's to pull.
That Grimlock's next choice!
He pulls the lever, and we see machinery on Cybertron's surface roar to life. Gears turn, lights blink, and the assembled Autobots, including Springer, Blur, Cup, Broadside, Wheelie, Sludge, Slag, and Snarl, all cheer. Up in the control room, Grimlock turns to Perceptor and asks,
Why you think Grimlock's stupid? Me not stupid. Grimlock's smartest Dinobot of all.
Unfortunately, that's probably true. I just wish all the Dinobots had more sophisticated brains.
Brains? Grimlock know how to bash brains. Maybe bash yours.
We then cut away to somewhere where we hear a faint chuckle. Then, peeking around a corner, we see a Skuxoid alien, and I assume Sleazardo from the Gambler episode. Unless this is another of his race, who dresses just like him and also has an eye patch over his left eye. The Skuxoid adds,
Come on, let's go do it, because we want to get some money. My kids, they need the dough, and Galvatron promised.
The Skuxoid is voiced by Hal Rail, voice of Snarl. Sleazardo spouts some gibberish sounds and follows the Skuxoid down what looks like large cables running down into Cybertron, which they slide down as if they were a giant slide at an amusement park. They get to their destination and we see Sleazardo is carrying a large pitcher of purple liquid, which he drops, then picks up again, hugging it tight. The Skuxoid says,
Good thing you didn't break it, because Galvatron says he searched the whole universe for more.
The Skuxoid then urges him to pour it in, and we cut away before we can see what's going on. Instead, we see Skylynx and Cosmos flying through space.
We're too late, Cosmos. We've missed the whole ceremony.
I wanted to see our auto buddy start up the new energy unit.
If we hadn't dawdled in space so long, hunting Decepticons, we would have... What's wrong, Cosmos?
Smoke pours out of our tubby friend's thrusters as he veers out of control, saying he doesn't know what's wrong. As he tumbles through space, he yells for help from Skylynx, who zooms after him, shouting,
Have no fear! Once again, I will save the day!
Skylynx races after him and then goes out of control as well, stating he's lost control of his autogyros. Back down on Cybertron's surface, Rodimus, Springer, Grimlock, and Perceptor are walking along when they suddenly hear Skylynx cries. Perceptor transforms to microscope mode to get a better look, and sees the two Autobots plummeting to the planet's surface. Rodimus and Springer jump into action, but they're too late. Cosmos and Skylynx hit the surface next to some of the machinery for the power generator. The Autobots, now joined by Blaster, approach their fallen friends, and Springer in helicopter mode lower some chains to hoist Skylynx to the repair bay. But after a ray from the new machinery seems to scan him or do something to him, Springer begins to lose altitude, transforms to robot mode, and crashes himself.
Hey! Something's jamming my transform controls!
Then Blaster runs up and attempts to radio Ultra Magnus about the problem, but finds himself similarly scanned and sent into a transformation fit. No doubt about it, this machinery is causing all kinds of problems.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, I feel like the beam that the generator is shining on them when they start malfunctioning is like trying to find a very visual way to make it clear that whatever that purple juice that Slizardo had earlier, it's somehow in the machine and it's making the Autobots malfunction, kind of a la the Cybertronium episode.
Yeah.
Right? But the fact that it's like this big purple beam that comes out of the generator, why would the generator have like projection beams like that? To me, that's always felt like the kind of animation you'd find in like a Gumby episode. it feels like really so clear that it's almost, you know, pedantic and also just confusing. But because like I feel like they could have just like showed some waves emanating from it or something. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the machine like targets Autobots has always confused me about this part.
We then cut away to later with Rodimus, Grimlock, and Perceptor consulting Teletran 2 for information.
The problem is in the master power generator deep inside of Cybertron. It's sending unidentified force waves up the central shaft. That force has entered the units on power platform Alpha, which is causing the Autobots to malfunction.
Teletran 2 continues telling them to shut down the generator and power core and repair them, or else risk every Autobot glitching so badly that they'll be forced to leave the planet.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. You'll all have to leave the planet forever. And while that clip was playing, that whole bit that you're listening to, it's Rodimus, Perceptor, and Grimlock looking at Teletran 2's screen, and it's just a field of space. Like, there's literally nothing else in the screen. Now, in the second part, when he says, like, oh, you're going to start glitching forever unless you get off the planet kind of thing, they do show some other stuff, but it's just, that's also a weird bit of animation. I know, we're not here to just constantly punch down on ACOM, but this is one of those things where, gosh, a careful watch of some of these episodes, yeah, you get it why some people kind of concluded that these cartoons were not very thoughtfully made and just, like, focusing on getting the commercial done. Hoover, you and I have spent a lot of time saying, like, no, there's a lot of forces at work here. These are people trying to do their best. But yeah, this one is just like, it's no Carnage in C minor, but it's like right out of the gate. It's like, yikes, problems. Also, yeah, it's like, this is the second time we've been here with Transformers having to like malfunction because of something weird going on and having to go on a quest to get the thing that will stop them all from glitching, right?
Yeah. Well, Perceptor says he'll begin construction on a crane to get Skylynx and Cosmos to the repair bay, and gives Rodimus a small disc-shaped object, allowing him to locate the generator below the planet's surface. So Rodimus, Cup, Magnus, and Grimlock head off into the depths of Cybertron to fix the new power generator, with Perceptor's little electro map directing the way. Which, by the way, makes the same sounds as the communicators on the original Star Trek.
Me, Grimlock, want to try electro map now?
No way, Grimlock. It's too delicate.
Me want to try!
Grimlock snatches it from Rodimus's hand and begins futzing with it. And in a matter of seconds, he breaks it, calls it stupid, and tosses it down a huge shaft.
Yeah, and this is the first time we get to see what the electro map looks like. It's like Hoover described, it's a disc that Perceptor hands Rodimus, but now we see it in Rodimus's hand and we see it in Grimlock's hand. And Hoover, what does an electro map look like?
A compass.
It literally has the circle with the arrow that points in different directions. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I mean, I understand it. You know, this stuff's hard to do, but wow. And like, I understand it's hard to show Grimlock breaking it with his big fumble fingers and everything, but wow.
And apparently that device was the only way to direct them to the power generator. Rodimus chastises Grimlock and he reacts accordingly. Grimlock then stomps off down a hallway, abandoning the others. And the other three decide to have Cup follow Grimlock to keep him out of trouble, while Rodimus and Magnus try to find the generator.
So this part of the story is very, like, it feels on the nose for me as somebody with a lot of siblings that this is the younger sibling story, right? As someone with a lot of younger siblings, like, you encounter this a lot. It's like, I want to do it. Let me try. No, you'll break it. You know, you don't know how to do it. No, let me try. And then something bad happens, right? And especially when Grimlock throws his tantrum and Magnus even calls it a tantrum, right? But there's a line here, too, that I want to underline if for people who are watching along. Cup says, what if he sets off some of the interior defenses in those tunnels? Right. And then that's when Rodimus is like, well, Cup will go follow and make sure he doesn't. I'm putting a pin in that because it's something that happens later on in the episode that I like.
Well, time passes, and as Rodimus and Magnus walk down a hallway, Rodimus starts to feel the effects of the power generator's waves. He falls to his knees and gets stuck transforming back and forth. We cut away to Cup and Grimlock, and they have actually happened upon the power generator, and it's starting to have an effect on Cup.
What's going on? You found what?
Me think something wrong with you, Cup. Just like Skylynx and others. Me, Grimlock, got to turn off machine right now.
And so Grimlock begins swiping at it with his tail, bashing the device, then yanking out wires between his teeth. And this seemingly begins to electrocute him as we cut to our first commercial break.
Isn't it interesting that Grimlock is not affected by this, whatever this effect is that's happening to all the other Autobots, which again mirrors the episode, what was it, Desertion of the Dinobots, parts 1 and 2 with the Cybertronium thing.
Yeah, it's got to be something, this is doing something to Cybertronian robots, and Grimlock is not a Cybertronian robot. He was built on Earth with Earth parts.
Ah, thank you for saying that, because that's something else that I want to bring into the third act of this episode, is this whole idea of, like, what happens when you make Transformers in different places, which is something that I don't think really registered with me when we were watching the show as kids, but after Beast Wars and what they did with characters like Tigatron and Air Razor and Inferno, it's like, now I'm thinking about that, like, where they're generated matters, right? So I think that's really cool. Okay, well, I don't necessarily feel tension because, I mean, Grimlock's just, I mean, he's Grimlock. He punched Unicron in the butt. A little electrical interference isn't going to do anything bad to him, is it? So, but at the same time, I could go to Kmart. I'm going to Kmart.
So poor Grimlock's getting electrocuted, and if we really want to feel his pain, we can get the Operation game from Milton Bradley and intentionally do a bad job and touch the sides.
Okay, let's operate. Where's the dog?
It's Operation, the wacky doctor's game where you're the wacky doctor. Batteries not included.
Oh, you blew it. My turn.
Take out asparagus for $100.
It takes a steady hand because if you touch the sides...
Here goes his fanny bun.
Don't get nervous.
I did it. That's $200.
Operation, a game from Milton Bradley.
Did you do that when you were a kid? Were you actually afraid you would get electrocuted if you played this game?
I probably would have been, but I didn't have it. I don't think I knew anyone who had it. I just saw it on endless number of commercials.
I remember like being like very afraid, and then the moment it buzzed, I was like, oh, it just feels like a vibration. That's not a big deal. So you don't feel anything. You don't actually, like, they couldn't possibly make a game that electrocuted children, right? Like, I know it was the 70s and the 80s, and we didn't know that kids mattered like the way we do now. But we wouldn't. Milton Bradley couldn't get away with that. But what I love about these, there's so many of these commercials when we were kids where it's all about stressing out mom, right? Like, oh, we're going to play Operation. And the kids are all huddled in the background. And the mom's like, Operation, where's the dog? And runs out of the room. Instead of being like, well, the kids are huddled saying, let's play Operation. Look over there, mom. But no, mom's too frazzled. Mom is way too frazzled. She's trying to hold down a job and put together a family and all that stuff. So, yep, that's what kids do. They make mothers lose their minds. So, yeah, Do I want this game?
It'll make your mother lose her mind.
Well, that's what we're all about, after all. Let's make our parents crazy. Okay, I'll take Operation, if only to harass my parents.
Or maybe you want to give yourself the gift of electronics knowledge so you don't make dumb decisions like Grimlock. And a way to do that is to buy the Science Fair 150-in-1 Electronic Project Kit.
Radio Shack is loaded with exciting, sensible, low-cost gifts, like the Science Fair 150-in-1 Electronic Project Kit. Kids can learn about electronics by building safe battery-operated radios, transmitters, computer circuits, electronic sound effects, even LED digital readouts. They get 150 different gifts they can enjoy long after Christmas is over. The gift-priced Science Fair Kit, only at Radio Shack, a Tandy company.
Okay, everybody. I want you to go back and listen to that one again. And I want you to hear when the dude says, they have exciting and sensible low-cost gifts. You tell me how that all comes together to make something that a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old is going to want. If a grown-up says it's exciting and sensible, already, I'm out. What they find exciting and sensible is not what I find exciting and also low cost. Oh, no, they went to Merchandise Outlet to get this. Oh, my gosh. Exciting and sensible low cost gifts. Everything about that. What was it with Radio Shack commercials? Who were they targeting?
NPR listeners.
They really were, man. I mean, it's just, I feel like as we revisit these commercials, like the 90s sort of extreme and Surge soda and all that stuff was like a direct response to Radio Shack commercials, right? Wow. It's, yeah, let's just go form a cult and get a compound in the middle of nowhere and we can celebrate our exciting and sensible low-cost gifts. Every child wants to hear that. Say, for those of our listeners who have children, try it. Walk into the room and say, hey, you know, would you like me to get you an exciting and sensible low-cost gift? Watch their face. See how they feel. I guarantee you, you don't have to have a ton of emotional intelligence to know that that's disappointment is what you're looking at. So, I mean, the 151 electronic project kit actually looks kind of cool. Why do you got to sell it to me with that guy who looks like he listens to Johnny Mathis? Oh, my gosh. Oh, Hoover, it's you're not pushing this hard on me. I'm going to get it, but not because it's sensible, but because it's exciting. My God.
And of course, to power all our electronic toys, we need power. So this commercial for Energizer batteries will show us the way their batteries can help us save the world.
Honey, wear a sweater.
Alien invaders!
Don't fail me, Energizer.
Of all leading batteries, nothing in this galaxy outlasts. Outlast the Energizer. It is Earth's power source.
Mom, after you save the world, what do you do with the prisoners?
The Energizer. Nothing outlasts it. It's power beyond your wildest dreams.
So... you know, we're not shining any new light on anything when we observe that this commercial is so emblematic of the time we grew up, where the kid's like, I'm going out to fight aliens. And the mom is like, doesn't even look at the kid. Doesn't even look at him. She's just like looking at the table, writing something, probably doing her taxes. It's like, all right, get back before dinner. And I mean, that's part of the setup for the joke when he brings home the alien at the end. She's like, oh, and she faints, you know, because again, stressing out parents is like the ultimate joy in a child's life. But just this idea of the kids, like, I'm going outside. You won't know where I am or what I'm going to do, right? We must have talked about this. I mean, was that your childhood? Was it basically like come home when you feel like coming home kind of thing?
More or less. I basically would state where I was going, and, you know, I had a very limited repertoire of places to go. But even so, I mean, we had this park, and there was like a trail behind the park. And if you follow the trail, it like led to coastal area. And one day me and my friend went down the trail and went to the part on the water, and I stepped in mud, and I literally stepped in mud that was like, not like quicksand, not like the TV warned us it was going to be, but because the TV warned us over and over, I thought it might be what it was.
Yeah.
And instead I just got my shoes all muddy.
Yeah.
And that was the worst of what happened. But at the same time, you know, I had no idea what was going to transpire.
Right, right.
And I had seen countless episodes of multiple TV shows that were warning me about quicksand.
Oh my God.
So,
yeah.
In my mind, I was lucky to be alive.
But yeah, my little brother and I had similar experiences where we got caught in like some like really deep, thick mud. And yeah, and I remember one of us, I'm not going to say who, crying, thinking like, this is it. This is the end. Tell mom and dad I love them. And don't give my toys to the other siblings. But
in fact, break them in front of them.
Yes. Smash my sludge into a million pieces and blow it in the face of one of my other siblings and he says hi. Forget who coined that joke. But yeah, like that idea of like my little brother and I, who were like thick as thieves when we were kids, like we totally had that Stranger Things like lifestyle of just like getting on our bikes and just going wherever, right? And like nobody knew where we were going. And so when I see this, it just looks so shocking now. But that was the way it was. Yeah, batteries. Batteries, another thing that like I feel like every Christmas morning was the thing that I would say 30% of American parents were ticked off that they didn't think to get. Like, what? It takes batteries? So I remember by like 1988, like that was like a thing, like that part of under the tree was like a big pack of like 12 size D weapons grade batteries, right? So you have to get batteries, everybody. That's part of the holiday season. So I got my Energizers too. And I'm surprised you didn't. Was Jocko the Energizer guy not until the 90s? I guess he was in the 90s. Or was he the late 80s?
Jocko.
Get the Energizer. Oi, that guy.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh. he's part of our fascination with Australia in the 80s.
Wow. I don't remember that. And I didn't remember this. I mean, this this commercial is like geared towards kids.
Yeah.
So they were trying to get the kids to determine what batteries they bought, which is kind of sinister if you think about it.
Oh, it totally is. But like, also, I think it's incredibly savvy because at this point we were pretty brand aware, right?
Oh, yeah.
We knew what we drank Coke or Pepsi. We knew whether we liked Kenner or Hasbro. So why not? Why not also like Duracell? Oh, don't darken my door with a Duracell. Rayovac. Oh, I'm sorry about your upbringing. My house is an Energizer house. Thank you.
As for me and my house, we follow the Energizer.
We like our beer cold and our batteries Energizer. So yeah, I bought all three, and I think I'm feeling buoyant and energized enough to go back and find out if Grimlock is dead or not.
Well, as we return, Grimlock is dead.
No!
No, just kidding. As we return, Grimlock rips the wires out with one final tug. He surveys the damage as Cup is able to clear his head. Cup asks how Grimlock managed to shut down the machine.
Die, Grimlock! good sense. Good going. You what?
Is your hearing impaired, Cup? Oh, with some Autobots, you have to explain everything. Using my teeth, I severed the connections, thereby breaking the electrical circuit.
Huh? Grimlock, is that you talking?
So it seems this new generator has filled Grimlock up with smarts. But we cut over to catch up with Rodimus and Magnus. There's no more ill effects of the generator, and they're able to walk unimpeded down the halls. That is, until they stumble into a trap. The door shuts behind them, an alarm sounds, and a wall of pointed metal spikes starts heading their way, part of a security system.
Okay, so this is like a part of the story that I feel like is pointing towards something a little richer than what we ultimately get from it, in that, who was it who found the generator? Grimlock. Right? Dumb old Grimlock, who they've been making fun of the whole time. Then Grimlock goes off in his tantrum. They're like, what if he sets off the traps? Oh, Cup, go stop him from setting off the traps. Who sets off the trap? Rodimus and Magnus, right? So it's like pointing towards, oh, maybe this is a story about Grimlock's sort of intuitive intelligence. Or maybe it's he doesn't have intelligence, but he has wisdom. Wisdom and intelligence are two different things. And so maybe his like earthy kind of caveman wisdom is something that they are overlooking and should rely on more, right? That feels like those two moments point towards that. This is all we get, everybody. I feel like, once again, there's promise of something there.
We cut to Cup and Grimlock, the latter of the two, sensing that their friends are trapped. The now intelligent Grimlock is able to locate the switch to shut off the trap, opening the door and reuniting the four Autobots. Rodimus is surprised to find themselves saved, and even more surprised still when Cup reveals that Grimlock saved them.
Grimlock, what did you do? Bite the controls?
That was hardly necessary. I, Grimlock, simply nullified the hazard by terminating the operation of the security system.
Did he say what I thought he said?
It sure sounded that way. Grimlock, are you feeling okay?
And as the pair try to understand these changes in Grimlock, we see our first Decepticon of the episode, Ratbat, perched on the ceiling above them. He takes off to report back to the Decepticons, but Rodimus spots him on the way out and fires upon him. But it seems the spy is just a bit too fast. We cut to later, with the four managing to get back up to Cybertron's surface. They're walking past a little pool where Slag, Sludge, and Snarl are doing some fishing. Robo-fishing, that is.
You come fish with Dinobots, Grimlock?
Please, Snarl, can't you comprehend that I have more urgent matters weighing on my mind?
But Dinobots always go fish together.
I have to determine the reason the generator in the power core malfunctioned. Some other time, perhaps?
Him have to do what?
So, what are lakes and Robofish doing on Cybertron, right?
Well, remember, we have seen bodies of water on Cybertron before. Of course, that was in the past when the aerial bots were visiting Orion Pax.
You are right. So that's a good observation, is that, yes, there is a precedent set for water being on Cybertron. And as the Autobots are revitalizing Cybertron, maybe they're bringing it back to some of the status of the Golden Age, right? And also, I mean, now that the Earth Defense Command is, like, more tightly integrated with the Autobots, maybe they would be like, well, these humans, they sure do like their liquids. I don't know what it is, but they like their liquids. So let's put some lakes on there. And the Dinobots like, this is fun. But yeah, that fish, I'm going to draw a circle around this just only because it's, like, one of those, like, consistency things. The fish that we see Sludge eat, we see him eat it. We see him bite down on it. We see the fish's face scream. And then we see it go down his gullet. Looks like one of those robo-fish from Quintessa, right? They're going to look different later because the lake's going to come back into play. But this is cute. I mean, I'm also glad just to hear all the other Dinobots talk, even though Swoop's not there.
Yeah. And now, almost halfway through the episode, we cut away to the Decepticons, who await the arrival of the Skuxoid and Sleazardo. They land a ship, and the Skuxoid comes out complaining.
Listen, Galvatron, you creepo! I did what you asked, and now I want my money, because my kids need it, you see?
insolent organics! You failed in your mission! Show them what you discovered, Ratbat!
Ratbat transforms into tape mode and enters the tape deck in the computer, showing the Autobots repairing the generator.
The Autobots have shut down the master generator. Without a source of power, the anti-electrons you planted there have vaporized. Thanks to your incompetence, my plan has failed, unless I find a new source of anti-electrons.
Slizardo, in his indecipherable language, starts yammering, leaving the Skuxoid to translate, saying he knows where they can get more of these anti-electrons. And this is enough to stop Galvatron from crushing them both. The secret location? Inside Unicron's brain. We cut back to the Autobots, who find themselves as an audience for Grimlock's scientific declarations.
The information I programmed into the analyzer has been processed. It is just as I suspected. Someone fed anti-electrons into the generator's power circuit.
Anti-electrons? Of course! They attack our electrocircuits. Now, why didn't I think of that?
Perhaps because your mental abilities are so limited.
Oh, sick burn.
Now, okay, so first of all, Perceptor, you had that coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because after all, don't you remember the episode Microbots? That was in your past. You were one of the main characters of that episode, Perceptor. And we learned a little bit about not jumping to conclusions about people, right? I mean, if Braun was alive to see that moment when you were slagging on poor Grimlock, he would have been like, whoa, what are you doing? So, one, you had that coming. But another thing that I feel like this episode is, whether it intends to or not, it feel like it's pointing towards this idea that intelligence breeds arrogance, right? Mm. If you become intelligent, you somehow have the right to look down your nose at people, right? I remember feeling like a lot of cognitive dissonance around this when I was a kid, because as I've described, like, I grew up in a very rural area where like intelligence wasn't prized, but physical strength was prized. Still, I was in the talented and gifted program as a child, for whatever that means in a rural town, right? And I remember feeling a little bit haughty about that. Like, I know all the planets of the solar system. Do you? Yes, we all know all the planets of the solar system, young Jersey. Well, you know. So this, I just feel like this points at another unfortunate thing about us as people. That, you know, it's like pride is a good thing. But, you know, when pride turns into this thing to leverage against other people, it's gross. And yeah, I don't know how much of this is Grimlock just being like, you were mean to me and I don't like it, Perceptor, so I'm giving you a little taste of your own medicine. But there's a lot of him like sort of doing like a, like, oh, you know, like when Cup didn't understand, like, so you gotta explain to everybody something. You know, he's really like complaining about how he has to like slow down for everybody else around him, kind of thing. So I don't like that. But I also feel like that was part of the air we were breathing back then. And to some extent, well, probably to a more of an extent than I would like, that's the air we're breathing today. But I'm pointing at it so we all try to not be so prideful towards one another.
Well, we then cut away to a Decepticon shuttle similar or identical to the one in the movie, pulling up to Unicron's head floating in space. We cut to inside the shuttle and we get a rare moment of Galvatron showing caution.
Approach with caution. Unicron may still be quite powerful. If he awakens while we drain his anti-electrons, we will need all our power to destroy him.
So as Galvatron talks about caution, we see him, Cyclonus, and Scourge sitting in a front row, and at least four unidentified robots behind them. Is this ACOM going way off model again? No, for these are the Terrorcons, a new combiner team. No, you didn't miss their origin story. This is actually their first appearance. So the Decepticons disembark from their ship, and Galvatron orders them to unseal Unicron's cerebral chamber. And we get our first glimpse of the Terrorcons in their alt modes. In short, they're all just monstrous creatures with no basis in reality. At least with the Predacons, there was an attempt to make them look like robotic versions of Earth animals. But the Terrorcons are just monsters. But we'll get back to them soon enough. Right now, it's time to check in on the Autobots.
But before we check on the Autobots, everybody, I urge you to look up at the screen if you're watching, because as we look at that shot of Unicron's head, all I can think of is the joke, we have Transformers at home, Transformers at home, colon, the picture of Unicron's head. Oh, Hoover, what is going on with that right eye?
Let's put a lot of junk in it, that way it'll look beat up and run down. It looks like there's like 17 corkscrews just sort of like stuck in his right eye.
It totally does. Oh, poor Unicron's head.
Well, then we see a hangar bay with a shuttle inside, and entering the hangar are Dinobots Snarl, Slag, and Sludge.
Grimlock? Grimlock, you here?
I'm occupied installing the multifaceted inverse thrusters. You're just in time to assist me.
From underneath the shuttle, we see Grimlock, again, in dino mode, underneath the shuttle like a garage mechanic, in dino mode. Right. Seems like his robot mode is better equipped for that, but as I said, he does not transform this episode at all. Grimlock is either building an entire space shuttle or modifying an existing shuttle to serve his needs, since Skylynx and Cosmos are still out of commission. And he makes a point to say that Omega Supreme is away on a mission, which is our final mention of him in the series. So we're not going to see him ever again.
Mm.
So Grimlock tries to enlist the Dinobots to help, and gives them complex tasks to do, but they aren't having it.
You no act like Dinobot, Grimlock. Me no like.
Grimlock no fun. Come on. We go hunting alone.
So Grimlock is left alone in his task. Time passes, and he explains what he has learned to Rodimus, Cup, and Perceptor.
My data reveals that the source of the anti-electrons was Unicron before his body exploded. The Decepticons have probably determined that more anti-electrons still exist in Unicron's brain.
So now the Autobots head out to Unicron's head, unaware that the Decepticons have beat them there. Inside of Unicron, Galvatron announces that they found just enough anti-electrons to paralyze any intruders. And we hear our first introduction to the Terracons. First to speak is their leader, Hunger, a white and gray two-headed sort of wingless dragon.
This good. Keep out invaders.
Now, Hunger is voiced by Marshall Efron, new to the show. He was in a lot of 1970s movies and TV like THX-1138, Trollkins, The Quickie Koala Show, Smurfs, Shirt Tales, Kid Video, and more. He died in 2019.
Hmm. So, while Galvatron is talking about this scheme, he's also sort of doing like a Steve Jobs introduction of his latest plan, where he's walking around on stage, you know, and everybody's like watching him, and he's pointing to what, Hoover? What is he pointing to?
A big gun.
A big gun, which just feels like, gosh, we've seen this a couple times now in season three. It's like Megatron had, like, at least Megatron, I know it made you mad, but he had a giant griffin at one point. He had Kremzeek, which, you know, it's like at least the guy had creativity, but Galvatron's always like, but where's the big gun? Is there a big gun involved? Well, do we need a big gun for this plan, Galvatron? Yeah, we need a big gun. So there's a big gun. He's standing right next to it, pointing to it proudly. Stand back, everybody, and gasp in awe at my big gun. Okay.
The craziest thing about this particular big gun is that it's really not much bigger than Galvatron is, and Galvatron already turns into a big gun.
A big gun. He turns into a big gun. He's blown up planets before. Oh my gosh.
Now I'm guessing they're pouring Unicron's anti-electrons into this gun so they can shoot at the Autobots maybe, and
yeah.
Galvatron can't pour the anti-electrons into him because that'll mess him up, I guess.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, this whole bit with the Decepticons feels really weak.
Mm-hmm.
But also just like, yeah, the idea of anti-electrons being like this liquid that is in the head of the Transformers version of Satan is actually a really, really cool idea. It almost feels Lovecraftian in a way. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, find a cool way to implement that and make some unforeseen consequences. But no, just Galvatron's good. It's a MacGuffin for Galvatron to put into a big gun and shoot at Autobots again. Yeah. Remember the Chaos Crystals, everybody? It's Chaos Crystals.
And before we can get to know the other four Terracons, Galvatron sees an approaching ship while he's looking out of the eye of Unicron. It's the Autobots. Galvatron spins his cannon in their direction and fires upon them, making a direct hit. The Autobots are forced to crash into Unicron's head, but survive and exit the ship onto the giant severed head. Galvatron is incensed that they're still alive.
Terracons! I want those Autobots torn into so many pieces that we couldn't even sell them as junk to the Junkions!
The Autobots start experiencing the effects of the anti-electrons just as they did before. Cup forgets where they are. Rodimus uncontrollably transforms back into Hot Rod and goes speeding out of control. They come under attack from the new Terracons, but they find they can't put up much of a fight in their condition.
Yeah, I want to grab onto that. Rodimus turns into Hot Rod, and not only does he literally turn into like his car mode from before he became Rodimus Prime, his color even changes. He goes from like that dark red to the brighter red that he was when he was Hot Rod, more of like a magenta. But Dick Gaudier pitches up his voice when he does it. He says, "It's happening again, Perceptor," and he flies off. So I gotta know, because this always confused me as a kid and as an adult, like, why did he turn back into Hot Rod? Is there any way we can put, now remember, got that recent review where somebody said, "Your brilliant theories." Does Hoover have a no pressure, but does Hoover have a brilliant Hoove theory for why Rodimus would turn back into Hot Rod under the effect of anti-electrons?
But of course, who do you think you're speaking to?
As he flashes his cape like Orson Welles.
Let's see, these anti-electron things, they've messed up Skylink's and Cosmos' flying.
Okay.
They've messed up Cup's memory. They've messed up the transforming of all these guys. And so now they're severing the connections between the Matrix and Rodimus. So
I didn't even pick up on that. That like it's Springer's a triple changer, and suddenly his transform controls go out of whack. Skylinks and Cosmos are flyers; their flying goes out of whack. Cup is the guy with all the stories, and he literally loses his memory. Right? He says like, "Where am I? Who am I?" So for Hot Rod, Rodimus rather, it's like you're the leader, you're the Matrix bearer. That's gonna malfunction in you.
Well, I mean, obviously multiple things are malfunctioning, but that's just one of the things that's going to go wrong. You know, it's it's inhibiting somehow the connections between the Matrix and Rodimus himself. It's like blocking off those transistors or whatever.
Oh, wow. That's very Star Trek-y, right? Yeah, like where everybody would have, like, what's the thing that they're known for and that gets taken away from them kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well done. Dust one's hands and walk away. You earned your pay this week.
Well, as the Terracons attack, another of them, Sinner Twin, who is another two-headed wingless dragon-type creature who is yellow and blue, shouts,
"That one my, it's me!
Sinner Twin is voiced by Jared Barclay, also new to the show. And his career goes back to the 1950s, and he was also in Trollkins, The Quickie Koala Show, Pole Position, and Foofer, to name a few.
Wow.
As the Autobots are getting stomped by these new Terracons, Grimlock just wanders off, as the Autobots call for him to come back and help. But he continues trotting off as we head to our second commercial break.
So is Grimlock a traitor? Is he just so intelligent now that he has no time for the Autobot-Decepticon conflict? I don't know. Well, I can hold that tension in my head while we go buy things, because that is the ritual. You know, twice an episode, you got to go buy things. So what are we going to go buy?
Well, now we have a whole new team of monsters debuting in this episode, but the Terracons weren't the only robot monsters on the toy shelves back then. We also had Zod from the GoBots toy line.
Mmm.
This is Zod, enemy GoBot monster. Three batteries not included. GoBot sold separately.
Zod is Psycho's monster. He's one meat-eating machine built to conquer friendly GoBots.
But if you can strike his hidden power switch with a laser lance...
Now! Stop Zod dead in his tracks! Until the next time he gets hungry!
GoBot Zod Monster comes with laser lance. Leader 1 and Psykill each sold separately. From Tonka.
Now, did you have Zod?
I did, because my next door neighbor traded him to me for something.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that in a while, like all the trading you do with your neighbor friends as a kid.
I did a bunch, and his parents hated it. It's like, what happened to your this? Oh, I traded it. Oh, you get it back. And yeah, there was a couple times I had to like trade back because his parents were so mad.
I love the idea of Hoover being like the swindle of the children on his block.
I wasn't like giving them bad deals or anything. They just didn't really want what they had, and they were GoBot toys, so who could blame them?
That's true. Actually, I should point out, you were the one who got the GoBot.
Right.
So I didn't have Zod, but I liked the idea of what the toy represented, in that he's a big monster robot that has like a special weak point that you have to hit in order to deactivate him, kind of thing. Like, you can play out that little play fantasy. Mm. Sort of like Bruticus's three buttons on his back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, at this point, I was so full on anti-GoBots, just as like a brand loyalty thing. And I wish I could go back in time to tell young Jersey, like, no, Psykill's actually a neat looking toy. We just calm down and just understand that you can like more than one thing. you don't have to be all about this or all about that. You can be about a lot of things. So yeah, never had him, but would have liked him. So now this is my chance. I'm going to get him. I'm going to get me a Zod.
Or how about an entire line of monstrous non-robot beasts who battle for the fun of it? Battle Beasts.
Battle Beasts! Wood!
Fire! Fire burns wood!
Battle Beasts! Fire!
Water! Water puts out fire!
Battle Beasts!
Water!
Wood! Wood beats water!
Battle Beasts! Collect every one of these incredible creatures to battle for fun!
Just activate their battle badges.
Oh my gosh, is this not the best animated commercial in all of the 80s?
It does look wonderful.
It does. I mean, it's like the commercial alone made me want those things.
And I guess maybe they ramped up the animation because, I mean, they're just like fighting with fire and water, and, you know, they're not, it's not like they've got like giant laser guns or anything. They're just using fire, water, and wood. So I guess they had to sort of make it more invigorating and exciting to kids.
Yeah, like really like meeting us three quarters of the way.
Yeah.
Right? But
yeah.
Look at the play fantasy you're going to be participating in. And look, we'll get Neil Ross and Michael Bell to do the voices of these characters. And it's like, oh, well, gosh, now I kind of got to get them. Because, yeah, otherwise it's like, what do they got? They got hologram stickers. Holograms ain't nothing. Mm-hmm. But what's the play feature? It's paper, rock, scissors, but with little animal people. I'm like, well, little animal people. But, you know, it's like Captain Power has, like, light guns and, like, you know, all these other toys, like Aerators has, like, air stuff on it. So, like, all these gimmicky toys are coming out, and it's like, what's your gimmick? We got a hologram sticker. So, but at the same time, the designs are really, really cool. But the thing that I'm leaning in, but anticipating my dad using a lot of those words I'm not allowed to use at school, they say collect all 84, Hoover. 84.
And they came in two packs, so
oh,
you only had to buy
like
42 two packs.
In 1987 money, oh my goodness. But yeah, I still have a ton of Battle Beasts. Do you?
No, I don't have them anymore, but it sure worked on me back in the day. Because I remember, I want to say it was Easter 1987, where I convinced my grandmother she needed to get me an Easter present. And here we were with all these Battle Beasts at the store. So
You need to, Grandma.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really cool little figures. And yeah, it's kind of astonishing that there's 84 of them.
Well, I think there's only, what's 84 divided by 3? Let's see.
Yeah, I think they get repeated because they put the earth, the wood, water, and fire sticker on the same dude.
Yeah, so that's like, what, 28, I think?
Yeah, something.
Yeah, 28. So there's 28 different molds or characters, but then you can get that guy in wood, water, or fire.
Yep, got to get him. So I got me a Zod, I got me a Battle Beast. Can he do all six? Can Hoover dunk this episode?
Well, how about one of the biggest monster toys of the 1980s, Decompose of the Inhumanoids?
The Inhumanoid Decompose turns living things into fiendish creatures.
He's got Zod! I'm going after that zombie.
Inhumanoids! Inhumanoids!
The evil that lies within.
Decompose and other figures sold separately from Hasbro.
Oh, man. Yeah. And Chris Latta played him in the cartoon. And this has to be one of the first zombie toys of our childhood, if not ever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the play feature is he puts you in his chest and you turn into a zombie. They call him a zombie. They call him a zombie in the commercial. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I loved the idea behind this character. So, and I never had him. Did you?
I didn't have anything from the Inhumanoids line. Not a thing. We didn't get the show where I was growing up, so I had no... Well, there was a comic book, but I didn't buy it, so I just didn't really have much knowledge other than the commercials.
Man, you know, it's like if we had infinite time, I would love to do a breakdown of the Inhumanoids cartoon series because I think there's so much interesting stuff in what they're doing in that one. And yeah, and I love how Decompose points toward what I consider to be the healthy fascination with horror when you're a kid. So, I mean, Halloween for crying out loud. But yeah, I will get him with gusto because, yeah, I wanted him so bad when I was a child. So finally, I have a Zod and I have a Decompose and I have like... 28 more Battle Beasts to add to my collection.
We got to collect all 84.
I got doubles of the bear with water on his chest. Darn it. That's all six. Ring your bells, everybody. Hoover won again.
Mm-hmm. Well, we return to our show to find Grimlock on a mission. Walking inside Unicron's head, he finds some equipment, knocks it over, and adjusts some switches without saying a word. We cut away, allowing time to pass, and we return to find an entire new robot in front of him. Boy, when he sets out to do something, he does it. Grimlock speaks to the robot.
Awaken, Nose Cone. I, Grimlock, have created you.
Are you my father?
In a way, but I'd rather you think of me as your fellow Autobot. You must help me vanquish the evil Decepticons. Now, transform! Drill me a safe passage deep into Unicron's brain.
Nose Cone is gray, red, brown, and yellow brown, and transforms into a sort of tank with a drill on the front. He's voiced by David Workman, who has a fairly sparse IMDb. But he was in Rainbow Bright, as well as the Where's Waldo cartoon, plus a few others. He does as Grimlock asks, and the pair go further into Unicron's head. Meanwhile, Cyclonus and Scourge have found more anti-electron liquid and collect it in a jar. And this awakens the giant.
I am Unicron. Who dares to enter my mind?
Now you've done it! You've gone and awakened him.
This was old Galvatron's idea, not mine. Trespassers, prepare to die!
And then lasers begin firing at the pair as they duck for cover. We cut away to Grimlock and Nose Cone, and... Grimlock has managed to build two more Autobots? Man, a lot is happening off screen. They come under attack as well, and Grimlock orders one of the new bots into action, one named Strafe. He has Strafe try to take out Unicron's defenses. Strafe turns into a red and white future jet type thing. He manages to take out some of Unicron's internal weaponry, causing the Chaos Bringer to scream. We cut back to Rodimus, Cup, and Perceptor, who have their hands full with the Terracons. Rodimus asks himself why he let Grimlock bring them here. And speaking of Grimlock, we rejoin him, and now he's got 5 assembled brand new Autobots with him. I'm going to assume that Unicron has like a Transformer making factory in his head, because these guys really look up to spec and not like random junk duct taped together.
You are all my new creations. I, Grimlock, shall call you the Technobots.
Yahoo! It feels great to be a Technobot! My name's Strafe!
Strafe is voiced by Steve Buehlen, who was Jigen in the Streamline Pictures dub of Lupin the Third, Mystery of Mamo, and Castle of Cagliostro. He was a voice in Vampire Hunter D, Fist of the North Star, Pound Puppies, Twilight of the Cockroaches, Zillion, Doomed Megalopolis, the Creepy Crawlers cartoon, and a lot more.
Far out! Fantastic! I'm Afterburner! I'm raring to burn neutrons and see some heavy action!
Mellow out, Afterburner!
Says who?
They call me Lightspeed, faster than a speeding photon.
Afterburner is white with red accents and voiced by Jim Cummings, who is new to Transformers, but goes on to have a huge IMDb entry which includes Foofer, Visionaries, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, Adventures of the Gummy Bears, Tailspin, and tons more.
Yeah, he's Winnie the Pooh now.
Lightspeed is mostly red and voiced by Danny Mann, who is also new to the show. He has a lengthy career as well, with some highlights including Galaxy High School. He was Hector on Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats, Darkwing Duck, Tailspin, and the Skeleton Warriors, to name just a few.
And you, Scattershot, shall be the leader of the Technobots.
But I thought you were our leader.
No, Scattershot. I won't be of use to you much longer.
No way! You built us! You're a genius, Grimlock! We can't survive without you!
You can, and you will. Go now. The Autobots need your help.
Scattershot is red, brown, and white, voiced by Stephen Keener, who also does Hunger. More description of their alt modes to come when we start to see them.
So, this is one of my favorite combiner teams of all. Hoover, you know this. And part of the reason why is what I love about just what we've gotten from their personalities so far. We heard Nosecone a little bit. We heard Lightspeed. And we heard Afterburner and Strafe. And what I love is these are like the future guys, the Technobots. The Technobots that suggest that they're going to be technologically superior and they're probably going to be a little bit more intellectual. And Grimlock made them, and he's super smart right now. But because Grimlock made them, two of them have at least 2, if not 3, because I would say Scattershot also has this, which we'll see in a future episode. They have Grimlock's aggression, right? Because like when we hear Strafe and Afterburner talk, they sound like guys like to mix it up on the streets, right? So, but then you get to Lightspeed, he's like, no, wow, right? So you got like the hyper intelligent sort of head in the clouds kind of characters, and then you've got like the really intense aggro characters. So they feel like they were born of Grimlock's psyche. And I want to say more about like human psyche through these characters' interpretation later on in the episode. But also, I was somewhere around 12 or 13 when this episode aired. You were a little bit younger than me. But this, I feel like this scene with the interaction between Grimlock and Scattershot really kind of hit me hard as a kid, even though the rest of this episode is just pure goofy bananas, right? But that exchange between those two, where he's like, we need you. And Grimlock's like, nope, you're going to be on your own for this thing. That felt very real in the sense that I was in middle school and I was really getting a lot of messaging from the grownups in my life that like, you're about to inherit the world, right? You are going to be a grownup soon. You got to start taking responsibility. You got to start thinking about college. You got to start thinking about choices that you're going to make that are going to affect the rest of your life. And I remember when I heard Scattershot say, no way, if that felt very real. I felt like, that's how I feel, Scattershot. I don't want to take all this on. I'm not done being a kid. I literally felt that, like, I'm not done being a child yet. Don't stop this now, you know? So that felt real. But the final thing I want to say about this Well, I got two things. One more thing that, like, philosophically is that I want to put a pin in, and maybe we can dig into it more in the wrap up, is they're made from Unicron stuff, right? Grimlock was made on Earth, so that makes him different than the other Autobots. These dudes were made from Unicron parts. What does that mean? Right? So that gets me excited about wondering. And then I have to wonder if, like, that earlier shot where we saw Stray fighting Unicron's defenses was an editing error, and maybe the part with Cyclonus and Scourge and Strafe fighting Unicron stuff is supposed to happen right after this part, maybe? Because otherwise, yeah, you're right. It's weird that all of a sudden, like, Strafe and Lightspeed are, like, just there earlier, and then afterwards, Grimlock finally introduces us to them all.
Yeah, it could be. I would not be surprised to hear that there was a problem with an ACOM episode, and they had to air it a little bit out of order in order to fix something that didn't get made.
Yeah.
But now we cut away to Cyclonus, who carefully carries the vial of anti-electrons out to Galvatron. Galvatron's joined the Terracons in the battle against the Autobots, who are getting really overwhelmed. Cyclonus hands Galvatron the vial, but is quickly shot, the container shattered in his hands. Galvatron demands to know who dares to do this, and we see Scattershot, a sort of future-y jet, fly in and introduce himself. He then changes to a third mode, sort of like a cannon, and he fires at the Terracons. The other Technobots arrive and debut their alt modes. Afterburner is sort of a cockpitted motorcycle, while Lightspeed is a red future car. They both speed around the Terracons, confusing them and turning the tide. Rodimus, Cup, and Perceptor are also confused at who these new Autobots are and where they came from.
I have to take this opportunity, since this is where we first see Afterburner's alt mode. I love his alt mode so much, Hoover. I think it is almost season three perfection in what I thought vehicles were going to look like in the future. This cockpitted motorcycle thing. And he's been remade a couple times over the last decade or so, and they've never improved on it. Like, I know that the original toy looks really clunky when you put him in robot mode, but that motorcycle mode looks so darn cool. I mean, and he's brown, right? It's like, brown is not an exciting color. Like, when you think about, like, I'm going to ride around on my motorcycle and impress the people that I want to attract to me, and it's like, well, give me that brown motorcycle, right? But he still looks amazing. Even in an ACOM episode, we first see him in alt mode. It was like, he looks terrific. But also, I love the line when he says, like, let's show him the stuff Grimlock made us of. Again, emphasizing this idea that the technologically superior team, the team that's, like, the more intellectual, was made by the character that we all associated with being the big dummy, the big clown, right? I like that, too. Is that this is like a very Ratatouille kind of thing. Is like, genius can come from the most unexpected places. So let's not get too sure of ourselves of what we can expect from the people that we know, right? I love that idea.
Well, the Terracons are only momentarily stymied, however, as they all combine together into a huge combiner robot.
Terracons, merge and become
Abominus is voiced by Stephen Keener, who also voices Hunger, so it's a rare case of the leader also voicing the combined form. Now, we haven't even mentioned the rest of the Terracon individual bots, who get no lines in this episode. We'll see them again soon enough, though, so for now, we'll just give a brief introduction. In addition to Hunger and Sinner Twin, there's Blot, who's blue and purple, who has maybe the vaguest alt mode of all. His monster form walks on two legs, but beyond that, it's kind of tough to describe.
Yeah.
There's Ripper Snapper, who's a white and blue beast similar to the alligator-style Sharkticons. And there's Cutthroat, who's a yellow, blue, and purple flying beast, kind of like a cross between Laserbeak and Swoop. And spoiler alert, the Terracons will be back next episode, so hope for more airtime then.
I'll touch on this briefly here, and then if there's time, we can go into it at the end. Is this, like, what I love about this duality between the Technobots and the Terracons is, like, as you pointed out, they're just monsters. They don't represent anything that we've seen in the world the way, like, the Predacons do. And so the Terracons, I feel like the Terracons and the Technobots are also, like, sort of this map of the human psyche, in that the Terracons are the place where our dreams come from, this dark sort of unconscious place where fantasy, mythology, fairy tales come from, all sorts of weird shit, like Blot, the fact that he even said, like, Blot defies description. Yeah, he almost feels like something unconscious, like something the unconscious would dredge up to represent some kind of psychological principle. And stuff in, like, in Jungian psychology, this idea of, like, what you banish to the shadow, which is to say, like, things that you don't allow to, like, exist in your ego consciousness, becomes fierce and wild. It's like you're banishing it to the woods. It's going to become more like a wild thing. But then the Technobots are, like, our ego consciousness, right? It's got our aggression. It's got our, like, our sense of, like, justice. I'm protecting, and I'm going to use anger as a way to, you know, direct change in the world. But it's also got, like, Nose Cone and Lightspeed, or, like, the thoughtful intellect. Right, they're the guiding principles of the ego consciousness, and Abominus is the wildness of the subconscious. I'll leave it there. If that's of interest to you later on, whoever, we can dig into it. But I think that's why I love these two combiners so much. And whether or not that was intentional, who knows?
Well, the giant Abominus starts swatting the Technobots around him, sending them packing. The Technobots head back to Grimlock for a new battle plan.
What do we do, Grimlock? The Terracons turned into a giant!
Do not fear, Abominus, for you have the power to become Computron! Merge!
They do so, and the newly created Gestalt speaks.
I am Computron. My computation capacity is nearly infinite. Yet I lack the intelligence to feed my capacity.
Computron is voiced by Burt Kramer, who is also new to Transformers, but had starred in bit roles on TV dating back to the 1960s and continued starring in small roles on TV shows until his death in 2001. Grimlock then dons a helmet with a wire running from it and tells Computron he will receive Grimlock's intelligence and he will go back to being the old Grimlock. Computron kneels and Grimlock plugs the wire into Computron's head.
But Grimlock, super intelligence is the only way you can defeat Abominus' brute force. It's the only way.
Grimlock flips a switch on the helmet and sends electricity surging into Computron's head.
Oh, me, Grimlock, say you smart now. Me no can help you anymore.
Datum received. Conclusion, must destroy Abominus at once.
Back outside, the Autobots are trying to stand up to Abominus, and Blur is here all of a sudden somehow. Thanks, Acom. When out steps Computron to even the odds, the giants begin to grapple.
Datum, Abominus's grip unbreakable. Conclusion, must use intense vibration to disengage.
And disengage he does as Abominus is shaken apart. The other three Decepticons fire on the new addition to the Autobot ranks.
What? Who are you?
Name, Computron. Primary goal, obliterate Decepticons.
Computron shoots at Galvatron, catapulting him across the surface of Unicron and forcing the Decepticon leader to order a retreat. We cut away back to Cybertron, where Rodimus addresses a gathered crowd.
Autobots, we've taught Galvatron a lesson he'll never forget. Our new generator is functioning flawlessly, and our future will be more secure now that the Technobots are among us. And we can thank Grimlock. Grimlock, has anyone seen Grimlock?
Grimlock right here. He loved to fish with Dinobots.
Me, Grimlock, say no fun to be genius all of time. Much more better to be good old Dinobot Grimlock.
And that's that, aside from a short bio on Ultra Magnus.
And we can't leave this episode without remarking on Grimlock fishing with the Dinobots, and he pulls out what looks like the biggest trout you've ever seen in your entire life. It's like the size of a Volkswagen, but it's a people fish now. I mean, it's an earth fish. It's not like a robo fish. So I guess once again, the Autobots were like, well, these humans, they sure do like their water. Well, you know, it's like the Dinobots want to fish. Well, Daniel likes to fish too. That's true. Actually, the first time we met Hot Rod, he was fishing with Daniel. So maybe that's him just like doing a solid for his little buddy. But yeah, there's Earth fishes on Cybertron now.
So this episode, we get two new combiner teams out of the blue. One with no indication of origin, and the other with a pretty cool origin. And for those keeping score, this is the last we're going to see of our little buddy Cosmos. This was his final appearance. Now, I'd be surprised if I've watched this episode more than 5 times in 36 years, so a lot of it I'd forgotten about. I didn't remember Unicron's involvement at all. It of course has problems, but it's a pretty novel idea for an episode. Dumb character gets smart. It's being pretty optimistic by introducing essentially 12 new characters in addition to a tangentially related plot, though. But by now, we're pretty used to this. Had this been spaced out to a two-parter, everything could have had more room to breathe. But then I fear it might mirror the key to Vector Sigma too much, where we saw the creation of the aerial bots and Stunicons. You can't leave the Terracons out completely because they're the impetus for Computron's creation. So I'm not really left with any clear way to fix it without making it a two-parter and giving it all more room to breathe. But I know one guy who liked this episode plenty just as it is. And his name is Jersey, so let's hear what he has to say.
Yeah, the whole like making the dumb guy smart for a little bit and like flipping the script on that, I think is... It's not something that I look at this episode and say, that's the best part, right? I feel like if, and I think you're right, like all the things I would ask for would overpack the episode. But if we could turn it into a two-parter, I would say that I would love for there to be an arc there where we learn that actually Grimlock, the way he is preferable, not just because it's what we're used to, right? Like when he's fishing with the Dinobots again, hooray, everything's back to normal. We hit the reset button. We'll see you next week. I don't want that. What I want is for them to recognize and value Grimlock for his own kind of intelligence, right? Super smart Grimlock is great, but we want the kind of wisdom that Grimlock has in his wholehearted way of living as a Dinobot, right? I think that would be the arc to take him on in this story. And also tying that somehow to his intuition about building the Technobots, right? It wasn't just because he was super smart that he could do it, although that's what gave him the skill to do it. It's like the fact that he knew to leave the battle because the Autobots were overmatched by the Decepticons with the anti-electron. So, you know, he's going to build it out of Unicron's parts. But bring us into something, and I don't think the writers would have had this kind of presence of mind, because I don't think they thought at the time that they were building a canon that we were going to be talking about for 30 years, right? But if there was a way to tie it into what are the implications of making Autobots out of Unicron parts, right? Mm-hmm. And if it were me, I would say like, well, gosh, this would partially explain the aggressiveness of Scattershot, Strafe, and Afterburner, and maybe even explain the sort of aloofness of Nosecone and Lightspeed, right? That's both a plus and a minus for all of them. And part of it comes out of the sense that they were made of this material that formed the Transformers devil, which at the time we weren't thinking of him that way. It wasn't until Simon Furman came along with the Transformers comic and really drove that point home to now we're at the whole Primus versus Unicron thing, right? So I think I'm asking for something that was too much for the show to bear at the time because of what it was. So the whole like Grimlock smart now, I feel like it's an interesting idea that gets played in this really silly way, but then in the third act becomes this really interesting thing because there is now a really powerful combiner that was made by a Dinobot. So Wheeljack's kind of the grandpa of Computron. But then also, like I said earlier, is I think there's something symbolically really interesting in the duality between Computron and Abominus. And I feel like the writers were intuiting this, I think. I think there was a level of them like having a sense of intuition about, well, the only way to stop something as wild and monstrous as Abominus is hyperintelligence. Okay. I get that kind of binary style thinking. That's how these stories play out. Good versus evil, right versus wrong. But the last like sort of twist I would put on it is like, no, maybe what we're discovering here is that these two guys are part of like a greater whole is that like there's like a time for the Abominus kind of creature to be in, you know, ascension. There's a time for the Computron creature to be in ascension. How you do that in a story, I don't know. I can't riff on that right here and now while we're talking, but give me time and I probably could come up with an interesting idea for a story.
Well, how about this as a theory? What if, since we don't know where Abominus and the Terracons came from, what if Galvatron made them out of Unicron parts?
Oh, that would be so cool. That would be so cool. Oh my gosh.
Then these combiner teams, the Terracons and the Technobots, would almost be like brothers.
Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. 1,000 times yes. Oh my gosh, that's my headcanon now. Because I don't think we find out where the Terracons came from.
I don't think so.
I declare that canon now.
Canon.
But gosh, if you're going to Unicron's brain anyway to get this MacGuffin, man, make that part of it, right? Like they're born out of material from Unicron's central processing chamber. In other words, his psyche. Mm-hmm. We're bringing forth two new kinds of Transformers from the psyche of this monolithic beast. Like there's even language, and like this is, I know everybody, if you made it this far, bless you for enduring the sort of extraness that I bring when I get excited about these kind of ideas. Like I know I can sound sometimes like a high school art teacher who's just like reading into everything way too much. Like I had an art teacher who like would look at like skin cream ads in a magazine and say, like, do you see the baby's face in the skin cream in the middle? Like they're trying. And I'm like, wow, really? You know, it's like not everything is subliminal, you know? So I know I'm treading in that direction. I'm aware of it, and you know, for what it's worth, it's like I acknowledge your courage and stick-to-itiveness in enduring it. But there's even a line in the dialogue where Scattershot said the Terracons turned into a giant, right? Mm-hmm. And part of it is like they're trying to say like, oh, well, they're kind of like Grimlock's children, and they don't know what a combiner is yet because they've just been born. So all they know is that like they turned into a big one, right? But even that language of they turned into a giant sounds like the kind of mythical, magical language of, you know, a fairy tale. Yep. The monsters turned into a giant, right? So that's, I love that about these two. And I'm just so frustrated and I don't want to say heartbroken, but I'm really sad that like, I think we only get them for like one or two more episodes, if I'm right.
I think so.
So, and I think the next one, yeah, the next one is really about those two and the differences between those two. But still, that they're not the A story. They're the B story. The A story is something else. But yeah, that's why for like the last 30 years, and Hoover knows this, I mean, like those have been my two, like the two original combiners that I've had since, you know, forever. They're the two that have always been on display in my studio at some point or another. And I also just love the design of Hunger. Like as a toy, he was a cool looking toy. And I love, yeah, like how Blot is like, what the heck is he? Is he a hunchback? Is he like a half fish, half man? Why does he have like little cowboy boots? That's weird. You know? And yeah, Ripper Snapper is like a shark with legs. Yeah. I don't understand them at all, but that's what's so great about them. They really feel like mythical beasts.
Yeah.
Versus these like very hyper future vehicles. Like Strafe is like this, like you described, it's like a weird future plane, but he doesn't have a nose cone like how planes typically do. He's got like this flat front and then two laser cannons that just stick out. Right. I think every Technobot also looks really cool. I love their alt modes. I love the color scheme of it, even though there's a preponderance of brown. And I love the way Computron talks. I love that he's this halting, stilted guy. Datum, this thing is happening. Conclusion, I will do this thing. He really reads like the way Shockwave was written in the later Transformers comics, right?
And he's also got a lot in common with how Omega Supreme talked.
Mm-hmm.
And now Omega Supreme is officially gone. So it's like he's sort of filling that role, at least verbally.
But also this idea of like, this going back to like them being a map of the psyche, is that like the ego is the thing that says, what is the right thing to do in this situation, right? How do I find control in this situation? And Abominus is the subconscious, the part that acts intuitively. It's more of like an animal-like thing. An animal doesn't stop and reason what is the right thing to do, right? Reason is a thing that slows us down, right? Mm-hmm. And but intuition and instinct are things that allow us to act spontaneously and authentically, right? There's something inherently authentic in the way Abominus shows up in the world. There's something inherently inauthentic in the way Computron shows up in the world. And that's where, like, the idea of, like, pairing them up as, like, brothers or two sides of some kind of thing is, like, really, really compelling for me. And that's the People Trapped in a Cave episode that I want, is where Computron learns to be a little bit more wild and Abominus learns to be a little bit more calculating, and then they're both way more awesome as a result of that, right? So, yeah, I think this is an instance where I'm showing up with a lot of baggage, which is making me bring a lot more to why this episode matters to me. Because I'll tell you this, too. Here's another little piece of my biography. When I was dating my now life partner, my wife, I actually made her, in, like, mixed audio tapes like we did, but I also made her mixed VHS tapes of cartoons that I loved. And this was one that I put on there.
She still married you.
She still married me. There isn't a day that I don't think how lucky I am that, like, I was like, I made you a mixed VHS tape. It's got some Shirt Tales on it. It's got some Transformers. It's got a couple episodes of DuckTales. You know, I want you to watch them all. All of them are very meaningful to me. You know, like, I did that. Whoever, I pushed it across. They're like, these are very meaningful cartoons. And this was one of the ones that was on there. And I was like, so what did you think of Grimlock's new brain? Because my wife, she likes Transformers too. She likes Grimlock especially, like a lot of people do. And she was like, yeah, it's okay. I was like, what do you mean it was okay? It's like one of the best episodes. And I watch it now. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get it. Why? Like, I was coming to the table with way more than what the episode was asking for. And sort of meeting it more than three quarters of the way, right? So I get it why this might not be your favorite, and I wouldn't even say it's one of my favorites, but I have an enormous amount of affection for a lot of the concepts in this one, and I love the idea of Computron's origin, even though, and I feel like there's, like, parts of the origin in this episode that are very, I think, spoken with some kind of authenticity and truth, but as you pointed out, it's like sort of, it's like part of a number of plot lines in this episode that are kind of competing for our attention. And the Decepticons really don't do much other than, like, go after a MacGuffin in it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't call it as strong of an episode as some of David's other ones, like, say, Chaos. Very strong episode. Cosmic Rust, we love that one. Transformers, mm-hmm. like, sort of like body horror story. So, yeah, but
just could have used more room to breathe and explain things better.
Agreed. Let me also say that if anybody wants to invite us to any Transformers conventions to have us on a panel where the chief topic is Computron and Abominus, I can fill 45 minutes. I'll leave 15 minutes for Q&A, but then we might need an extra 25 minutes because every question is going to lead to, like, a lot more wonderings about Computron and Abominus. But yeah, what do we got next?
Well, next up is Money is Everything, which is Season 3, Episode 25 on Tubi. And there's only 9 episodes left of the original series.
As we hinted, Money is Everything predominantly features Computron and the Terracons. I think mm-hmm. they might be the only Transformers in the episode. But they're not our main characters.
No. Gotta revisit Marissa Fairborn with this one.
Well, and a new character who shows up who, oh my gosh, following our tradition in the T Public store, I might have to make a t-shirt out of him next. And Hoover's gonna go, no. Oh man. Money is Everything is a really nice looking episode though. I think it's a Toei one. Mm. So there's at least that to look forward to. But yeah, the Technobots have a lot of really fun scenes in this next one. So, all right. Well, thank you for this discussion, Hoover. I always feel like I've articulated more fully my love of this project, this cartoon franchise that we grew up with every time we get together. So if you want to experience hyperintelligence and bestow life upon the rotting corpse of your demonic devil creature to turn them into a new breed of life, go write a few nice things about us wherever you listen to this, you know, whether it's like, you know, Apple Podcasts, or you could even go to like one of the different social sites and say, this is the thing I listen to. Here's a link to it. This is what I like the Jersey brings. This is what I like the Hoover brings. This is my favorite Transformer. That all sends a signal into the internet to say that this thing is meaningful, and that helps more people find it. And plus, you know, it's just, it's like everybody who makes stuff, we're doing it not necessarily because we want to be rich and famous, but we do hope that it lands someplace into somebody's heart, and getting that signal back is super meaningful. Just getting the little signal that like, no, this meant something to me too. Wow. Thank you. That's what we all are here for, right? Is to positively affect one another. At least that's what Hoover and I are here for. So thanks to everybody who does. Now, I'm going to go back in time to, you know, 10-year-old Hoover, who is swindling all of his fellow neighborhood kids out of their GoBots. And say,
how about I trade you this magic dirt for your GoBot Zod there? Yeah, it's magic dirt. You pour some anti-electrons on it, and it becomes a Topa that you can create and send around your house and make clean your room and all sorts of things. Sure, totally.
Panel three, the kid's crying in his living room as his parents are swearing at him for putting dirt all over the grass, and Hoover is running into the foreground laughing like Randy from Pee-wee's Playhouse. So with that kid firmly in our minds, what is the more mercenary thing people can do to help support this project?
Oh, you can go to our TeePublic store, and that's at teepublic.com/user/4,000,000 years later, and see the designs we have there. It's gotten a little dusty, that website.
I know.
We recently had someone purchase a shirt of Sean Berger.
That's right. That's right. So somebody is out there trying to help us make dog lunch into a thing. Now, and I will say, like, it's strange that this happened when it did, because I've just started noticing that I'm hearing other people use the term dog's breakfast for what some people would say is an S-word show. Like, that's the slang I typically hear for that. Or, like, dumpster fire. Like, oh, it's a total dumpster fire. I'll hear people say, that's a dog's breakfast. Now, one, it's like, okay, dog lunch. I'm a little bit of cognitive dissonance around the idea of saying that like dogs are creatures that we should give garbage to for breakfast because they're living creatures that we should honor and respect and treat with kindness. But at the same time, it's like, I also want to make dog lunch into a thing. So I want Sparkplug Witwicky's legacy to live on. So yeah, thank you for people who purchase things there, like the dog lunch t-shirt. You could make it a thing. You could go there, get a dog lunch t-shirt, and people say, what's a dog lunch? And like, you don't know what a dog lunch is? I'm going to be like Grimlock and look down my nose at you because I'm more intelligent than you. No, don't do that. Don't do that. That's not nice. Okay. What's the website one more time, Hoover?
www.tpublic.com/user/4,000,000 years later.
I bet you could also just search for 4,000,000 years later on the site too. And it's linked in the show notes for this episode. So you have the link right now in your pocket on that little glass slab that you're listening to this thing on. All right. Well, the show drops on Thursdays at 4,000,000 years later.com and in podcatchers everywhere. And until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of 4,000,000 years later.com and rss.jdrozd.com for everything I make.
I have been Hoover, made out of spare Unicron parts.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye.
Episode synopses are from imdb.com, and some episode information taken from tfwiki.net. The closing theme is by Nick Mihalik, based on the original closing theme by Ford Kinder and Ann Bryant. You can find more of Nick's music at soundcloud.com/Nicholas-Mihalik.
That's spelled NICHOLAS-MEHALICK.
Find us on Facebook under 4,000,000 years later, and you can email us at 4,000,000years later@gmail.com.
Visit 4,000,000years later.com, and if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. You know how it works.